Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Extra Serving, a podcast by The Last Bite Network, a production of Nation's Restaurant News and Restaurant Hospitality. I'm your host, Holly Petrie, here with the latest episode. This week on The Last Bite Network, Takeaway with Sam Okus aired an episode with Luke Holden, founder and CEO of Luke's Lobster, where they discuss supply chain issues for the vertically integrated company. In the Kitchen with Brett Thorne featured Sam Fox last week, where Brett and Sam spoke about the acquisition of Fox Restaurant Concepts by Cheesecake Factory and his new restaurant and club in Nashville. Stay tuned for this week's episode, which should be airing around the same time as ours. And be sure to check out this week's episode of Snapshots of Success with Mod Pizza's Chief Marketing Officer, Mark Shambora, who speaks about the brand's first national marketing campaign. Today, I am joined by two of my lovely colleagues.
My name is Sam Okus, Editor-in-Chief of Nation's Restaurant News.
And I'm Joanna Fantozzi, Senior Editor with Nation's Restaurant News.
Welcome back, Joanna. We're glad to have you here post-Create.
Yes, glad to be here.
And we're all like tip-top shape now. I have my voice back. Everybody's feeling good. None of the germs that we all brought back with us from Denver. Good to go.
You're the only one who got sick, Sam. None of us were sick.
He got sick prior, though.
So. That's true.
Yeah, that's what happens when you have a five-year-old and a three-year-old. You get germs, and then you talk for basically 2.5 days straight, and then you stay up longer than you should, and you go 2 hours west and have issues with time zones. Anyway, yeah, my body was dealing with a lot. Let's just say that.
Well, I don't have a 2 or a 5-year-old or any children, and I still had strep during Create, but I infected none of you, so I call that a win.
I hope nobody who is in Denver is listening to this right now, and they're like, "Wait, what?"
They would have gone by now if they'd caught anything.
Yeah, I was like, "We're past the 2-week mark. We did it."
What about the people who had strep immediately going to Create and are like, "You?"
I was on antibiotics. It's so easy. I had no symptoms, and I have no children at home, so I don't know how I caught it as a 27-year-old. So that's just quite fun.
You live in New York. There's just like a bunch of people there.
I feel like you get more stomach bugs on the subway.
Yuck.
Yuck is right.
Anyway.
It's not a lot of fun. Anyway, let's talk about McDonald's.
Wow. I don't know if we should roll from stomach bugs into McDonald's. Oh, geez.
Not saying McDonald's gives you stomach bugs. They did something good this week. So.
Yes.
So we're happy about McDonald's. This week, McDonald's announced that they achieved equal pay for women and other underrepresented groups at corporate restaurants. Seems a little late, but they did it. I feel like that's the button there. It's done at the corporate restaurants. I don't know what the franchise units, I don't know what their plan is for that. I know it's different because McDonald's has such a big franchise union and not union, but they have such a big franchise group and all of those people. So I'm not sure what that's going to be, but at least at their corporate restaurants, there's equal pay.
Yeah. I mean, the news here is that McDonald's does something, you know, by the time McDonald's does something, everybody should be following suit. And so the biggest restaurant company in America doing a thing makes it something that needs to be done. There's work to be done, and you know, for a franchise organization, it's complicated to get these kinds of things rolled out to your franchise system because of the relationship with your franchisees, the fact that, you know, some of these things aren't code, and you know, they're not required of franchisees. Franchisees can pay their employees, can choose what they pay their employees. And so that's complicated. So when you think about the fact that McDonald's is 93% franchise, something like that, lots more work to be done. But yes, I, you know, give credit where it's due. McDonald's is taking strides where it should be. And that is a message to the rest of the restaurant industry that if you haven't done that, you should be doing that.
It feels like the same refrain from last week when they introduced the McPlant. Like if you don't have a plant-based burger, you're behind the times. If you don't have equal pay, you're behind the times. What were you going to say, Joanna?
Oh, I was just going to say that, you know what? I always think it's interesting that whenever companies introduce some of these groundbreaking statistics of either equal pay or other things like that, it's always, you know, the caveat, the little asterisk, at company-owned restaurants, and Sam, as you said, that's excluding 93% of their restaurants. So I always wonder what the difference is between pay at the franchise level then?
Well, it must vary from state to state, and they have to hit local guidelines. And it's, I mean, I can't imagine running a restaurant company like that. We say this all the time. None of us can imagine it. It seems astronomically difficult to even have to deal with, especially like when we were talking about all the state closures. You're dealing with all these different things in different states. Now they're dealing with vaccine requirements in different states. It's just...
It's complicated, yeah. Now, I will say, personal anecdote is I was going to get my dog food yesterday, and not my dog food. I don't eat dog food for my dog, just to clarify. It's not my dog food. Anyway.
We needed that clarification. Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure, because as I said it, it sounded like, that's kind of weird. But it's right next to McDonald's, and outside the McDonald's, there's this big banner saying, now hiring $12 an hour. Now, I live in North Carolina, which has a pretty low minimum wage. I think $7.25, maybe. I might be wrong about that, but definitely around there. And so, you know, $12 an hour is a big jump, but still, like, it's still not in the realm of where, you know, this industry is going. And I mean, I know we've all seen these signs everywhere right now, because the restaurants that are having trouble hiring, this is what they have to do. They had to put out these big banners to say, you know, we're going to pay you more than maybe the guy across the street. But in some ways, it does feel like it's missing the point, because, again, the broader conversation is more toward, you should be getting to $15 an hour. You know, at Create, we had Michael Astoria join us for a conversation on labor. You know, Michael certainly way more on the progressive side of things when it comes to labor. But it was a really engaging conversation, because he made a really good point that, again, like, $15 an hour is becoming more table stakes, especially because of what we're going through with the labor crisis right now. So it's just interesting to watch all this, because, yeah, restaurants have a lot of fronts to fight on right now. But the labor piece and the wages, that's going to be a constant point that they have to come back to. And I do feel like, you know, for franchisees, again, I've never run a restaurant, so I know that the P&L, this is a complicated issue. But if you want to be a responsible operator, paying your employees and doing it equitably is becoming something that is really not something that you can really question. You have to just do it. It's the right thing to do, and that's what your employees will expect of you.
A lot of operators I'm speaking to actually think that $15 is old news now.
I agree. So, Joanna, you actually wrote a piece this week about the labor crisis, which was super interesting, and how some restaurants are handling it, which, you know, we kind of talked about in terms of low wages and how people are hiring. Can you tell a little bit about that article?
Well, what's so interesting is that more and more operators that I'm speaking to are really thinking at this point that the higher wages is really not enough. And that you have to go above and beyond to create kind of an atmosphere of teamwork and upward mobility and other benefits that are not necessarily what you might get from a paycheck. So I just looked at a bunch of interesting things that restaurants, both independents and chains, are doing to go above and beyond. And I think one of the most interesting was Explore Restaurant Group, which is in Arkansas, is actually paying students to do their homework. So mm-hmm. they have a lot of their employees are students, and they are allowed to 1 hour on their shift to spend it doing homework, and they get bonuses if they get A's and B's on their grades, which I think is really cute. And it might seem sort of gimmicky, but I think that a lot of operators are trying, especially in this case, this is definitely an independent operator type of thing to do. I'm sure McDonald's wouldn't necessarily do this. It's about sticking, throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks. Because traditional, just keep inching those paychecks up by dimes and quarters just really isn't cutting it anymore. Another operator I spoke to actually over email is looking into buying cars for his employees that are struggling. As a Jersey Mike's franchisee, that he's struggling to find employees that have reliable transportation. And previously, NRN has written about sending corporate employees to work in stores. Raising Cane's is sending corporate employees to work in stores. I think it's about half of their half of their corporate team is working the front lines, as they've been saying. So it's just trying every which way to fill in those gaps.
Any thoughts, Sam?
I just realized I was muted. I was about to do that awkward thing where I was talking and you weren't. Anyway, yeah, I do have thoughts, which is, you know, I think we should talk about culture because, you know, again, going back to seeing all these banners saying we're going to pay more money and hearing about here's a freebie we're going to give you a free phone if you take a job here, all this stuff. And, you know, some of those things are effective, but sometimes they're missing the point. And the culture piece of this is that people can be very selective in terms of who they go work for right now, right? So the workforce, if you're looking for a job right now, everybody's hiring. And so if you're in the market for a restaurant job, you can pick which restaurant you want to work for. And, you know, young people especially, because for a lot of these employees, they're young people, they want people to invest in them. They want leadership. They want to be a part of something. They want to change the world. You know, I mean, not everybody, but like generally speaking, I think, you know, folks are looking for an environment in which they can grow and prosper and feel like they're a part of the team. And that all comes back to culture. So I guess as part of this conversation around pay, that is a piece of it, but also people want to feel like they are taken care of. And, you know, we've been harping on this a lot lately because Monty Moran, our keynoter at Create, former co-CEO of Chipotle, you know, he talked a lot about that idea of vulnerability and loving your team. And it sounds kind of chintzy, but like when you think of this concept of love as just being like care about your employees, that is a really important piece of this that people can't miss, because building that culture is going to be as important to employees as getting a better, you know, higher paycheck. So anyway, I think that's just something that we all have to think about in this conversation around pay, is it's got to be paired with a good culture. Because if you're paying them more, they might only last for a couple months before they go to the restaurant across the street that's going to pay them more because they need employees too.
Yeah, it's about treating your employees as human. And I think far up on that list is also flexibility of scheduling for people that, you know, take care of kids or and whatnot. And I know also at Create, Black Box told us that flexibility was, I think, was number one after higher paycheck of things that that are on employees' wish lists.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. I had something in my head. I was like, I think there's a data point here. And you're right. It was Black Box. They were talking about that. That was more important than pay. So that's just so critical that to pay attention to what your potential employees really want, because it's not always the higher paycheck.
Well, one company who is having a higher paycheck, it's a horrible transition, so bear with me. One company known for their great pay is In-N-Out. How was that?
Well done.
Thank you. In-N-Out was in the news this week because they had to temporarily close a San Francisco restaurant, their only San Francisco restaurant, which, by the way, we never made it to In-N-Out at Create, in case anyone was wondering, following along in our podcasts. We never made it there.
That's your fault.
I will take responsibility for that. So the only In-N-Out in San Francisco temporarily closed because they refused to check the vaccine requirements of every customer going inside. So San Francisco has a law that, as part of their COVID requirements, that you must check vaccine of anybody dining indoors, and In-N-Out refused to do it. They were warned several times and this location was forced to shut down. They have reopened, but only for takeout. They have not reopened their dining rooms. And In-N-Out released a statement where they were like, we're not going to police our customers. That's not our job. It's the government's job. That's not us. Somebody else should be doing this, basically, is what their chief legal counsel said. So I'm curious what your guys' thoughts are on that. I know In-N-Out is kind of a very private company, so we're not really used to hearing stuff from them. So it's odd whenever we get a statement from the legal counsel.
Yeah, it's surprising, honestly, for them to show their cards a little bit. yeah, I mean, look, the checking vaccinations, I get it. That's a pain. I'm sure for the restaurants that are having to do this, that is so complicated and it's messy and your customers are angry and it's just a mess. But you got to follow local regulations. You know, it's like, I don't know. It's you need to play ball, especially when it comes to this stuff, because again, this is short term, and as much as it sucks, you know, you can't just start paying your employees $2 an hour because you don't feel like paying them minimum wage. There's rules and regulations for a reason. Even if you don't agree with those rules and regulations, you just got to play ball here. But I am surprised that they would make that statement, because that takes it even further beyond, well, this one store wasn't in compliance and we're dealing with the penalties and working around it, which would have been a big, you know, kind of a non-statement, which would I would have expected from them. But for them to come out and basically say, we're not going to police this. Yeah, I felt like showing their cards, and I don't know. I'm not going to come out here and say that's irresponsible, but I will say that, like, this isn't the moment, In-N-Out. This doesn't feel like the right moment here. If you want to show your cards a little bit, maybe do that on other things. But, you know, look, numbers are going down. Delta is receding, as we've seen in the news. I feel like we're not so far away from hopefully maybe sort of kind of getting out from under some of these mandates again. And, you know, can you just deal with this for a couple more months, maybe? I don't know. I just think when companies make overt statements like that, where you're like, whoa, okay, well, we know where you fall. Unfortunately, it just drags you into this conversation. You know, and look, the easy comparison here is Chick-fil-A. And, you know, Chick-fil-A is a really, really well-run company. It is, I eat there all the time because my kids love it. It's so easy to just run through the drive-thru, all this, you know, all these great things. And, you know, that was like that one thing that Dan Cathy said that unfortunately it thrusts it into this conversation that's like, we didn't have to have this conversation about Chick-fil-A if it weren't for that one thing, sort of. So I guess the point is I was like, is In-N-Out going to be that next company that we're like, oh, well, I guess we know what In-N-Out thinks about this. I don't know. I just get frustrated because I'm like, let your food speak for yourself. Follow rules and regulations. Have good customer service and let your food speak for the customers. Don't come out and make these statements that are like, now we all got to wonder about what's going on at In-N-Out, you know?
And it was a long statement too. So part of it goes, we fiercely disagree with any government dictate that forces a private company to discriminate against customers who choose to patronize their business. This is clear governmental outreach and intrusive, improper, and offensive. I mean, that's pretty... pretty out there. That's bold.
Strong language. Yeah.
Yes.
I was surprised. I was very, very surprised at this. I kind of thought that, again, that, like, Sam, like you said, that they would just kind of vaguely say, yeah, sorry, this one store wasn't in compliance and we're dealing with it. But it is very interesting. And I think my first thought was, is this really the hill that you want to die on?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like you could have gone a couple more months and just let it go. Like, we're pretty deep into a lot of this stuff. And now you want to say it? By the way, I want to add one other thing about the Chick-fil-A to Chick-fil-A's credit. He said it. He didn't say it in an official company statement, right? Like, he said it like he thought it was going to be his private views. And the company, I thought, did a pretty good job of not making this isn't what, you know, Chick-fil-A is just Chick-fil-A. And this was his individual views. This guy's attaching it to the In-N-Out brand, right? So I'm just surprised, I guess. Yeah.
Both my brands, by the way, Chick-fil-A and In-N-Out are both my beats. So, kudos to me for getting those. Yes.
I don't know why we did that. We got to undo that somehow.
But yeah, I mean, it's a bold statement. It was a long statement too. When I got it emailed to me, there was nothing quiet about it. So I was pretty shocked. I mean, you would think that a company would just say, you know what? Sorry about them. Even if they could secretly believe it, but they could secretly believe all of the things that they're saying. They could internally believe it, but they could outwardly say, we're sorry, we'll fix this. Like, that's an easy PR Band-Aid. This is the opposite. They ripped that Band-Aid right off.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And not to drive home the point too much here, but In-N-Out is like literally the only company that we never hear from. Like, we do kind of have to put a fine point on this, because at Nation's Restaurant News, I like to say we have access to every restaurant, but very much not In-N-Out. This is a very, very secretive company. So, Joanna, to your point about the hill to die on, it's like very rare for this to happen, like exceedingly rare. So it just kind of blows your mind.
Very weird.
Well, let's go from very weird and mind-blowing to your interview this week, Joanna, which I'm sure is going to be just absolutely wonderful. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
I hope it's not too weird. Well, I spoke with the CEO of Joe and the Juice. Joe and the Juice, for those not familiar, it's a European brand, and they have a lot of locations in New York and a couple other cities around the United States. They are, as their name implies, coffee and juice bar. I spoke with their CEO, Thomas Norox, about their expansion plans in America and kind of what makes their brand stand out.
Interesting. I always thought that the person who founded it was named Joe and it was his juice.
I did too. And then I realized, oh, I get it. Coffee.
Sam, don't make a joke about that. I heard it as I said it.
I was going to say, I thought his last name was And the Juice.
There you go.
There's a Joe and the Juice like two blocks away from me, and I always walk by it, and I really like some of their juices. I'm a big juice fan. I'm a big fan of $10 juices, $15 salads, $10 juices. You got me. So,
man, what is New York doing to you? Jeez. How do you guys live there? Sheesh.
Not very well. All right. Well, here's the interview.
So just to start off with, can you give us some background about Joe and the Juice brand and how you guys made the leap from Copenhagen to the United States?
No, next year we are having a 20 years celebration. So looking forward, and in the US it's coming to a 5 year anniversary. We always wanted to come out to all of the metropolitan cities in the world, and it was more or less the ambition from a founder from day one, and with the concept of having a good, healthy alternative to the broader audience.
Yeah, for sure. And so could you just kind of give me your elevator pitch about the brand? What makes Joe and the Juice stand out as a brand from other coffee and juice bars?
We focus very much on the ambience. We are a made-to-order concept, so we put a lot of focus on having our juicers giving you as a customer a good experience, put a lot of focus on only the products that you see, or the raw produce that you see is what coming into our product. So everything is made in front of you, but we train our people so they become very proud and very diligent in what they're doing, and that way around can give you a performance and give you that ambience and that vibe together with our music when you visit our stores.
Yeah, for sure. So you've recently had your strongest sales figures in your company's history, ahead of even pre-COVID levels. So could you tell me a bit about what's driving that growth?
Again, I think there is more of a move towards what are you eating, towards more healthy products, very convenient products. And what we offer is a good, healthy product, and that's where we see the trend is moving to. Seeing that where we have gained a lot recently is through the digital channels that we introduced just prior to COVID. So now post-COVID, we have people returning to our stores, but we see that they still go to our digital channels. Just before COVID, we introduced our app. Now it's between 10 and 15% of our turnover, and people using our app, we can see that they are among our frequent customers, or more frequent customers than the people who pay with credit cards, that where we can track them. So definitely there again, we can communicate with our customers in a way that was not possible for us.
And you introduced your app right before the pandemic then?
We introduced it back in January 2020, so we were just coming in, and we saw the best performance in our company in January and February, and then came March, and you saw it in Europe. It was 2 weeks before it hit the US that sales just said stop, full stop, and then in the US 2 weeks later. Then what we did do in COVID, in a number of locations where we could not have in dine-in customers, we could still use the app, and we could that way around probably, and we did achieve our targets on the app much quicker than what we thought we would have done. And we probably like in year three of the initial plan we had for the app. And those people are sticking to basically they can now pre-order, they can get their loyalty points, and we can communicate with them. So if we see that you purchase specific products, we can give you some offers on other products. And again, just appreciate that you come to our stores on a regular basis. Something we had more difficulties in understanding before, whether you were a regular customer or not. And we like treating our regular customers well instead of discounting our products.
Okay, that's really interesting. So why do you lean more toward that personalization than over like just regular discounts?
Very much so. So very much towards really starting communicating with our regular customers. Again, because we are a high frequency visit, we really like where we succeed is where you go for a coffee in the morning, or where if you go for lunch at least once or twice weekly. And again, if we can communicate with you, understand you better, then we can treat with you and maybe make you interested in some of the offerings that you would usually not choose.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think that so many brands are realizing, whether it's because of their digital investment during or right before the pandemic or whatnot, that customer data is so important, and kind of knowing your customer, what they're ordering, and kind of what you can offer them that will make them repeat customers.
No, very true. And what we do as well, we try to see what works on the West Coast, works on the East. What do we have from our London market and the more European markets, and take the best of breed from these markets and then introduce it in the other markets. And while still being relatively small in terms of units, we are in a number of geographies and can gain from the benefits from the trends in the various geographies, trying to not necessarily be first mover, but coming just after the first mover. And why I'm saying not necessarily being the first mover is that we still cater to the wider population, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. And you guys are interesting in that you are pretty evenly split, I believe, at this point between European stores and US stores. Now, I don't know how many stores you guys have in the US right now, or how many stores
do you have? We have a little more than 60 stores in the US. And in total, in the whole network, we have 300. So still a majority in the European market. But we see a lot of similarities between the UK market, where we also have 60 stores, primarily in London, and then the US versus continental Europe.
How does having...
And it's again, because we put a lot of emphasis on our employees and what is important to our employees. You can say where we came from in Scandinavia versus the workforce in the UK and the workforce in the US. And again, one of the things, back to one of your initial questions, what makes us special is that we offer our people to travel the world. So if you are a talent, we offer you the opportunity to go to New York. We will give you the housing, the visa, the healthcare. And if you are like in the beginning of your 20s, go out, experience a new country, a new culture. It's amazing. And that way around, we can also ensure that what the experience that you have in Paris is similar to the experience that you get in New York.
That's so interesting. So how has that offering for people to travel to new cities where you guys where you have stores, how has that impacted your labor relations? And I know that so many restaurants are having trouble and are having trouble retaining employees right now. So,
and if we first take the US and then more on a global network. You can say in the US we saw it more than a year ago, so we put a lot of emphasis and in our recruiters. So we have recruiters out scouting the market and really telling about who we are to potential candidates. Therefore, today we are not having issues getting juicers into our stores and also offering something more like, if you are a talent, if you want to travel, you get the opportunity. I believe we also have an advantage being a growing brand. If you are a talent, if you really have ambitions, you can relatively quickly get your own stores, given that we are growing. But if you see in all of our countries, we are sending people and we use it actively. In the Nordic region, we also really put a lot of focus on creating a career for you working in Joe and the Juice. So we'll give you first a 2-year program where you work your way up to becoming a bar manager. We'll send you out to a European destination for a number of months. And upon then graduating from that program, you can then further progress in our internal developed career paths.
Mm-hmm. And do you offer the same?
We are still at an initial phase in the US. Sorry, Joanna,
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, do you offer the same thing in the US? But it looked like you were about to answer that anyway.
Not yet, because we're still a relatively new player in the US, but we will do. And what we are doing in the Nordic region where we're coming from, we also putting up then building relationship with the local schools. So it will most likely in the US then be colleges. So we're really trying first to take the best learnings from our core market, but it's somewhere where we see that we can do things differently and offer to our users something that you will not easily get with some of the other operators on the market. And again, it probably also comes a little from where we're coming from in our world. It's, yes, the products are important, the quality of the products are important, but over and above, it's the experience that you get in our stores, given that we're also fully aware that the product itself is not necessarily unique.
That's true. So I'm probably going to focus a little bit since our publication focuses mostly on the US, I'm probably going to focus kind of on your plans for growth in the United States. So obviously you've made your goals in place, doubling the size of your portfolio by 2025. Wow, that's quite a goal. So how do you plan on doing that? And is any of that expansion going to be stateside?
The expansions is very much going to be in the US. We're going to have high focus on the US. You can say that in the initial years, we went to 7 US states over a period of 18 months. It was hard work, a lot of learnings from how everything is different from one state to another state. But now we have the foundation, and therefore we also have the benefits now of choosing, do we have the right workforce in New York to really open 10 new units over the next 12 months? Are there really good opportunities in Chicago, also with the leases? Do we have the workforce to really put focus there? So it gives me a lot of confidence that we have a lot of markets to expand in, and we can do it in the markets where there is the right balance between what's available on the market and the workforce that we have in those markets. Again, here it is so important that we have the right bar managers to take over the new stores when we open them. Mm-hmm. But we see a lot of potential in New York. It's where we have the majority of our stores still. And that's where we see huge potential in the coming years. So very excited to get going.
Well, I hope you guys come to Queens, because that's where I am.
I'm sure we will in due time. And what we're doing as well now, we're also getting some local real estate colleagues in place who can really focus on, let's say, if it's the New York area, and someone who can really focus in California, or it's down in Miami. And for the forthcoming future, we will focus on where we are right now, because in a number of markets, we still are below the optimal size. I would say that when we are at 10 units, that's where we can really have the good local strong management teams. And that's where we're going to focus to, in all markets, be at least 10 units before then moving into to new geographies in the States.
Mm-hmm. And so why do you think now is a good time for the brand to rapidly expand?
Again, I think like post-COVID, people are thinking more about what they are consuming. They are also putting more emphasis on. I do believe that this whole thing of having the social interaction, being in a room where you feel comfortable and where you can really feel the community, will prevail also in the future. And I think this is what we can offer.
And what are the challenges of growing quickly, and how do you expect to approach those challenges?
The challenges remain our juicers, to really ensure that we have the well-trained juicers, especially because we are made to order concept. So you need to really have that smile on the face at the same time as you can produce a lot of products to keep up the productivity. So looking at some other concepts where it's more taking things out of the fridge, then here it's more down to really you as a customer feel if you're coming into one of our stores and our juicers are not well trained, then they do not have that confidence to both serve you and produce the products. Therefore, again, the main concern is it's not finding the locations, but it's really ensuring that we can give you a superior experience every time you visit our stores. Because if we can do that, then we will succeed.
Yeah, I think that's the key, right? As you expand, just maintaining that quality, that made-to-order quality that you guys were used to.
Yeah. And the other thing where we put a lot of focus on is also like social activities. We have our soccer clubs. We have certain like Friday bars. We'll have yoga sessions. All of these, what can you call it, like activities that we also offer outside your work, and it's up for you as an individual whether you want to participate or not, but often we feel a greater sense of community and also to understand our colleagues better if we go out and do some sport activities together and go out, have some goals together. Again, we spend so many hours of the day in our workplace. And if we can make it a happy place for you, then you will stay longer, which is in the end also good for us. And so we really are focused on that retention. And in the initial years, a lot of social activities. And then in the latter years, also ensuring that if you are a juicer at Joe and the Juice, that you also see that you can have a career in Joe and the Juice. Whether you want to stay in New York City, or if you say like with Joe and the Juice, I can go to Paris and we can offer you your place in Paris.
That's definitely a dream job for me. Sure, I might sign up.
I would do it as well, thanks.
And what would you say are your non-numbers related goals for Joe and the Juice moving forward?
Again, it's increasing our retention. So really in ensuring that we can be a place where you want to be as a young, ambitious profile. Again, in our world, we call them juicers. If we can achieve that, then we can give you a good experience, and that way around then be to your initial question, what is it that makes us special? And we believe what makes us special are our people.
It's, and that's so true for any brand, right? It's you have to focus on your people. And on that note, I do think that's all the questions I have. Thank you so much for talking to me, Thomas. I really enjoyed getting to know the brand a bit more. And I hope you guys expand to the outer boroughs of New York City soon.